The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by TheraWorks. Hey, listen up. If you're one of the millions of Americans who suffer from muscle cramps in your legs and feet, relief is finally in sight. TheraWorks Relief is a topical foam that's clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast, and with daily use, TheraWorks Relief can even prevent muscle cramps before they start. Finally, you'll be able to get a good night's sleep and do all those activities you love and not worry about muscle cramps. TheraWorks Relief is a life-changing product, and best of all, you don't even need a prescription. It only takes minutes to apply, it absorbs quickly, and it really works. It's time you made it yours as well. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS, Rite Aids, and Walgreens pharmacies, or at TheraWorksRelief.com. That's TheraWorksRelief.com.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0 out here in the Silver State, Nevada. It's a hot, sunny day. It's 10:30 in the morning. I'm looking out the window from a podcast studio, and I guarantee you I've got between 75 and 100 geese out there in the pasture. We just got finished irrigating the fields out here, and I guess these birds come out there, these geese, and I guess they're eating worms and bugs and stuff that come out of the grass when we flood these fields. So anyway, it's an interesting sight to see damn near 100 geese right outside your damn window. And things are loud as hell. And boy, I tell you what, I love y'all saw it on the computer a couple months ago. There was a guy out golfing. I think he was on the PGA circuit. And maybe he was just out there playing. But man, he was going to get his ball. And a goose was over by the water. And that goose went over and attacked that son bitch and knocked him on his ass. I'll tell you what, right now, I walk out in that field right now, and if I got to dish out 100 stunners to 100 geese, that's exactly what I'll do. Because they can come out here and shit all over my property, eat all the bugs and worms they want, but if they're going to attack me, yours truly, Stone Cold Steve Austin, don't think for one split second that I won't open up a can of whoop-ass on each one of their feathered asses. Shit, by the time I get finished hitting all them stunners on them geese, there'd be a pile of eggs and a pile of feathers, and I don't know how many of them would actually survive. Let me digress. That's not going to happen. These geese are friendly geese. We're out here. Everybody's getting along. So as long as they give me my space, I'll give them their space and they can continue eating my bugs. But I digress. We're packing up today. Tomorrow we're driving back to Los Angeles. A little under a 500 mile drive. Stop and get a sandwich. Try to get into L.A. before we get into that sorry-ass rush hour traffic. And looking forward to getting back in a little bit cooler weather. That's the only thing L.A.'s good for is that damn good weather. And it's a good place to live, just too much traffic. But it's been peaceful out here. It's been real enjoyable. I've got a chance to ride my motorcycle, my four-wheeler, my mules, and my Terex. I've been tearing shit up out there, putting a lot of miles. Usually I can probably get down damn near about every day, every other day, and when I get out, I'll put between 25 and 50 miles on whatever I'm riding and learning more areas to travel on. So I'm having a good time out here researching, exploring. I tell you, my brother-in-law, Mitch, from Nevada Hunting Services, was out scouting this past weekend, and he sent some badass pictures on an Instagram account. So I'm looking forward, if we can flip our RV, I'm going to get me a little toy hauler and put my buggy in the back of that thing. And I'll tell you what, there's some beautiful country out here to RV and camp out on, so I'm looking forward to doing more of that. But hey man, let me tell you about today's podcast is almost backed by popular demand. Y'all responded so positively to my Gregory Iron podcast when we were talking about his life story and his time in professional wrestling and motivational speaking. And man, that guy's had a hell of a story, and there's even more to talk about next time he comes over to 316 317 Gimmick Street. But after we finished that podcast last time, I said, hey man, I said, you got another hour? And he said, hell yeah. I said, you want to just shoot the breeze about the business and pro wrestling? He goes, yeah. So, man, I rolled sound, queued it up again, and we just flapped our gums, talk about the business, talk about a few matches and some talent. And so, because he was so popular the first time around, today's podcast is my conversation, part two. Independent conversation, but just talking about the business with Gregory Iron. Hell of a guy, and I really, really enjoyed talking to that cat. So I wish him all the best. best. On a side note, along with all my riding and all my excursions out here in Nevada, I got a chance to watch the UFC 226 this past Saturday, and damn, it was a pretty damn good event. I didn't get a chance to see, what was that? Was it Max Holloway versus Brian Ortega? That match didn't happen. That fight didn't happen because I guess something happened to Max. So I was disappointed I didn't get a chance to see that because that was going to be a barn burner. It was nice to see Anthony Pettis, Showtime, get back on track with a win. He really needed that win and beat a super game opponent. Was it Michael Chiesa? That dude is badass. He was really unorthodox, great submissions. But, man, Anthony Pettis tapped him out, and that guy is going to get back in the mix. I'll tell you one thing. Man, I was looking for an absolute slugfest between Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis. I don't know what happened. I don't know what the fight strategies were. I know Derek Lewis had muscle spasms in his back, so he was having a hard time getting going out there. But Francis Ngannou didn't bring nothing. Nothing. Herb Dean was the hero of the fight. Herb Dean had to stop the fight to encourage the guys to engage and actually fight. Both of these guys went to fight camps to train for a fight. And when the bell rang, or when Herb Dean says, go, are you ready to fight? They went back and forth and back and forth and just kind of, I don't know what happened. Derek Lewis won a unanimous decision over Francis Ngannou. Francis Ngannou was a number one ranked contender. Lewis was a number five contender, I believe. Ngannou just went through, you know, five rounds with Stipe Miocic, who we'll get to in a minute. God dang, and he hit Stipe with a couple of pretty good shots. I mean, he damn near knocked Alistair Overeem's head off a few months back. Then he goes out there with Derek Lewis, who is really heavy-handed, is really a hard puncher, and did not engage. I don't know what the F happened. I don't know where his mind was or where his head was. Heard Dana White talk about he had some ego problems. Boy, I tell you what, if you had an ego problem, this setback was a big setback because that number one ranking is really going to come down, and I would be surprised if he got beat by the number five fighter 3-0, unanimous decision, and really didn't connect one single time. I doubt he's going to stay in the top 10. There's too many game guys out there that want to fight that deserve to be in that top 10. Man, that's a UFC. It's a premier fight organization in the world. That dude is very, very dangerous on his feet. So I don't know what happened, but it was extremely disappointing. Extremely disappointing. Man, I tell you what. Anthony Pettis, Showtime is back in the win column. He needed a big win. He got a big win against Michael Chiesa, and that dude's super dangerous, man. What a potential superstar this guy's going to be. But I tell you what, man, Showtime came out there and, man, submitted that guy on the ground. It was crazy. So he needed that win. He got a win. It was a badass fight for as long as it lasted. And then, man, just in the main event, my man, DC, Daniel Cormier, taking on, you know, coming out of the light heavy division. He's the light heavyweight champion, stepping up to the heavyweight ranks to take on the reigning, defending, baddest man on the planet, Stipe Miocic. And I was talking with my buddy Joe Romero, a guy that designs a lot of T-shirts for me. And we're both huge DC fans, but I'm a Stipe Miocic fan as well. And I called Joe up and I said, man, I said, both guys are extremely smart fighters. I said, this is going to be a clinic and we'll see, you know, that wrestling background that DC has. We'll see what he's able to do with Stipe Miocic, who's just a bad stick of wood and hits hard. He does everything well. He trains hard, keeps a level head. And I called Joe up and I said, dude, I said, I'm feeling DC on this thing. And he goes, you do? Because he's a big DC fan like I am. I said, yeah, man, I think he'll get it done. I didn't know how. It was just a feeling I had. And, man, I tell you what, they started a little bit of dirty boxing, clipped him with that short right hand, turned it over, flashed Stipe, went down, referee stoppage. DC, world heavyweight champion, light heavy and heavyweight. There's only been a handful of other guys to hold a belt in two divisions. So Daniel Cormier goes into that company as well. And now I guess that takes his fight record to 21-1 and no contest. amazing, simply amazing. That means he was already going to go down as one of the greatest of all time, but now he really has cemented his legacy. And we'll see what comes out of the promo that happened afterwards with Brock Lesnar. They had Brock queued up. Here he comes, looking like $1 million. And Brock just draws a lot of attention whenever he goes anywhere, especially here in the fight game, where he's had a very, very successful and interesting and lucrative career. And he goes out there and he cuts one of the best promos I've ever heard. So-and-so's a piece of trash. So-and-so's a piece of trash. Daniel Cormier, I'm coming for you, mother sucker. And, oh, man, and Daniel started jawing back and forth with him. It was a good time. But congrats to Daniel Cormier, world heavyweight champion, light heavyweight champion in the UFC. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy and a guy who has cemented his legacy as one of the all-time greats. In fact, I cannot wait to see whenever they line this fight up and drop the date. I will be tuning in because that is a can't-miss fight for sure. Both guys are going to make a lot of money, and both guys are going to put an entertaining fight on for a shitload of people who will tune in to buy this pay-per-view. Man, DC, Daniel Cormier versus Brock Lesnar. That's got money written all over it. It could have been Stipe versus Brock, but that is not the case. It's Brock and DC, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good one. Hey, man, let's get down to business, folks. Before we get to my conversation with Gregory Iron, hear me out about the WWE Network. The WWE Network is an online video streaming service where you can stream every single WWE pay-per-view live. You can watch more than 10,000 hours of video on demand. You can get a look behind the scenes with WWE's groundbreaking original series and documentaries, and you can access anywhere, anytime, and on any device, including game consoles, TVs, phones, tablets, and computers, and watch every single stunner and every mud hole stomping done by yours truly, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and that's the bottom line. Now through July 15th, we have a special offer just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show. New subscribers get a 2-month free trial when they sign up for the WWE Network at wwenetwork.com/Austin. Check this out. Your 2-month free trial includes WWE Extreme Rules, which is this Sunday, where the WWE superstars cut loose and throw the rule book out the window. And the card this year is stacked with a reunion of Team Hell No as Daniel Bryan and Kane take on the Bludgeon Brothers for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Also, Raw Women's Champion Alexa Bliss defends against former best friend Nia Jax in an Extreme Rules match. You're also going to get WWE's biggest party of the summer as WWE SummerSlam comes your way on August 19th. So get on over to wwenetwork.com/Austin to start your 2-month free trial. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Hey everyone, it's Scott Braun and Kelly Nash from MLB Network here with our new show, Baseball and Chill, exclusively on Podcast One Sportsnet.
Kick back with us each week as we cover all of the action on and off the diamond with player interviews and in-depth storyline analysis of what's happening in Major League Baseball.
Relax with us every Tuesday on Baseball and Chill right here on Podcast One. Download and subscribe to new episodes exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. Also, rate us, leave us feedback. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we would.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, I'm sitting here talking with Gregory Iron. Gregory, what's happening?
Not much, just hanging out.
Hey, Kelly. Kelly didn't mess up the first podcast, but sure enough, she came by to avenge herself on the second podcast by grabbing my hat and my glasses. The other day, she had these things chewed up in a few pieces, but I was able to put them back together. Greg, let's talk about pro wrestling.
Let's do it. We talked
a while back, but we just talked about your career and people that influenced you and your influence on other people, motivational speaking.
Yeah.
The success that you've had, the hard work you put in, all your dreams, stuff that you still want to do.
Yeah.
Let's just shoot the breeze.
Sure.
Let's see where this thing goes.
Yeah.
What do you feel like talking about? What were some of your favorite matches growing up?
Well, obviously, the first one that stuck out in my mind that... you know, it really set the course for my wrestling love was WrestleMania 6, Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. And, you know, considering the buildup and the atmosphere of that match and, like, two babyfaces wrestling each other, like, I know now, very rare occurrence. Intercontinental title versus the WWF title, like just being in the Sky Dome, like just 67,000 people, like that match made me a fan.
So then who are you pulling for in a match?
Hulk Hogan all the way, because my grandma had shown me a Hulk Hogan promo, and actually I was scared shitless of the Ultimate Warrior, because he just, I don't know, he was scary. He's cutting these like loud, scary promos, so I was very intimidated by him at first.
Yeah, but you know, you cut a great promo yourself. You know, a lot of people, you know, back in the day, I guess there was heat between WWE and Warrior, and they made that DVD called The Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. And it kind of painted him in not the greatest light.
Sure.
And some of the guys were, you know, kind of making fun of his promos. I was always a fan of his promos because, you know, your promo is designed to, you know, either build your character, build yourself,
Run
over an opponent, or sell tickets, whatever.
Absolutely.
But man, to me, when I heard Warrior promos, I can't say they all made sense to me,
sure,
you know, or putting, you know, filling up the rocket ships, you know, or all this other stuff, but it made me believe, and dude, I'm a lot older than you,
yeah,
but I got it. I used to go to the Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas when I was playing football for North Texas State University. I lived in Denton. That's 30 miles away. I was working on a freight dock down there, driving forklifts and loading and unloading trucks.
Yeah.
Friday nights, I'd drive down there with my football buddies, drink beer, throw shit at the wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know, Saturday mornings, I'd be there by myself watching some television tapings.
Yeah.
You know, Dingo Warrior was coming through.
Yes.
So I saw him way back in. Of course, I remember him and Sting with the Blade Runners down there. I guess it was with Bill Watts and also with Jarrett down in USWA.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I saw, you know, Ultimate Warrior, when he got up there to the big time, you know, cutting those promos, I was a fan of them just because they furthered my belief, or allowed me to suspend my disbelief as far as the character of the Ultimate Warrior. So, and in that match, you know, I was thinking, oh man, they're never going to replace Hogan. And I don't think, you know, Warrior did.
Sure.
But, it was an interesting matchup. And it was two guys who were more character driven than they were action driven within the ring. And that's with respect to Hogan, because he can work his ass off.
Oh, yeah.
Crowd psychology, et cetera.
Yeah.
He's not going to do the whirly gigs, all this crazy stuff, but he knows crowd psychology.
Yeah.
But my point is, I always appreciated Warrior's promos as much as Hogan, because Hogan was a master at the promo as well.
For
probably,
sure.
You know, a very high level master.
Yeah. Well, did you ever watch Hogan's stuff in Japan at all? Back in like the 80s and like mid 90s?
I probably haven't seen as much as you, but I mean, a whole different ball of wax over there.
It's like a whole different Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
Like, I mean, he has this match with Great Muta in 93, and I think he was technically the WWF champion at the time, so he was doing a couple Japan shots. He does an enziguri. Now, enziguris are pretty common placement these days, but to see Hulk Hogan do an enziguri,
yeah,
mind blown. Crazy.
Did you ever see any of the stuff with Bruiser Brody or Stan Hansen?
Yeah.
And those guys. And for that matter, Terry and Dory Funk.
Yeah.
They're in Japan just running roughshod.
Oh, yeah.
But in particular, I mean, Brody and Hansen were just crushing people.
For sure. I got the opportunity to meet Stan Hansen a couple years ago, and it was a cool life moment for sure. Because that lariat, no one better.
I got a chance to meet him. I guess Vader was putting him. Vader just passed away a couple, you know, weeks ago, months ago.
Maybe
now this airs. But I got a chance to meet Stan. I met him a few times because when I was down there in WCW in the early 90s, man, I was a nobody. I was Stunning Steve. And, you know, Hansen was coming through. He never really found the success in the territories here that he did in Japan.
Yeah.
Always highly respected, had success, but not at the level in Japan.
Absolutely.
But I'll never forget, he was working that angle with Lex Luger. And Lex Luger had really been on fire, you know, earlier. I guess that was NWA when he was working with Flair and the Horsemen and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Flair basically made the guy's career.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he's feuding with Stan Hansen. And Stan Hansen, you know, he was just, you know, the dude from, somewhere from Texas, anywhere. You know, chewing tobacco and all the stuff. And just big, tough cowboy guy. And when he spit the tobacco on Luger,
yeah,
beating the shit out of him in the ring, and he started spitting that tobacco, I was like, I was in heaven because I didn't like Lex Luger at the time.
Yeah.
But I got a chance. I'll never forget. It was a TV taping. It was in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I was going down the ramp. Stan was coming up because I guess I didn't have anything for him, or he had already done what he was going to do.
Sure.
I didn't know if Stan was going to say anything to me or not, so I stuck my hand out, you know, as you do.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this guy doesn't know who the F I am. But
yeah.
That's Stan Hansen, so I want to say something to him.
Sure.
And, you know, he was always real cool to me the one or two times that we ever had any interaction. And so that one time when I saw him in the Hall of Fame, when Vader put him in, And I got a chance because he saw me and his eyes lit up like mine did for him. And this was my chance as an adult. I mean, well, as a guy who is what now in my, I guess I was late 40s or early 50s when I met him.
Yeah.
And I said, Stan was down in Orlando. I said, Stan, man. I said, man, it's congratulations. It's good to see you go in. And we got to kind of talk as peers.
Yeah.
He was a generation ahead of me, but that was a really cool moment just because, man, when you watch that guy, did you ever see the YouTube video when he knocked Vader's eye out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That dude, and he always says, you know, it's due to his limited eyesight. I'm calling bullshit on that. Now, I'm not saying he can see like an eagle.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you can see close enough to know what you're doing with your clothes,
sure,
your punches, or your thumbs.
Right, yeah.
But it was just a really cool moment because he was a guy that I really looked up to.
Amazing. One of the best.
Favorite match?
Ever.
Yep.
Wow. I mean, that's very difficult. I've always been drawn to this match. Actually, the whole pay-per-view is very good. WrestleMania 19, Jericho and Shawn Michaels, like the first time they ever met, because I love Shawn Michaels and Jericho so much. So like for me as a kid, like that was a dream match. I mean, man, it's hard to pin it down to just one because a lot of my favorite matches end up having Shawn Michaels.
Man, he's in a bunch of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing about Shawn, like Ric Flair is my favorite pro wrestler, and I think he's the greatest pro wrestler of all time.
Yeah.
But I think Shawn Michaels is the greatest in-ring performer of all time, just as far as his ability to do offense, to sell as a heel or a baby, well-rounded,
yeah,
athleticism. And if you look at some of the things that people are doing today, whether it's on the indie scene or within WWE,
sure,
great athletic stuff.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
next level.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Shawn was just able to capture the pro wrestling style and his fluid movements and the way he moved and the way he sold and his body language to me and the fact that I've never, ever seen Shawn Michaels blow a high spot. I saw Vader blow a high spot with him, and he cussed him out and stomped him on his head.
That was SummerSlam 96 in Cleveland.
Was it?
Yeah, that's where that was at. Yep.
God dang it. And you know, Vader didn't have to run. He should have had in WWF at the time. But Shawn Michaels, I think, is the greatest in-ring performer of all time. And Chris Jericho, because I remember watching Jericho, I guess when he came from Canada, and then he'd been somewhere else. He came to WCW, and I was like, man, who is this guy? He had that hairdo.
Yeah.
Good-looking guy.
Yep.
And you think, ah, man, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah.
Watch him work, you think, man, this stuffing guy's good.
Oh, yeah.
And then as you keep watching him and getting better and better, and he was already good when he came in.
Sure.
But the thing about Jericho that I always appreciate, because he's a super hard worker
almost
in anything he does.
Yeah.
But if you watch the way he always builds his matches, when he gets into walls or he'll always get in. He's not the kind of guy that always has to get his shit in.
Yeah.
But he's always going to be the guy that has that holy shit moment in his match as a part of the build,
uh-huh,
whether it's leading you know, into the climax or going into the comeback or the false finishes.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff off the ropes, the lion, the walls of Jericho, or whatever it's called. Just the way he built his matches, I thought Chris was an extremely smart worker and a tremendous promo.
And I feel like he always knows, like, the perfect places to tease the walls, too. Like, almost of nowhere. Like, it's not, like, anything crazy. It's an elevated Boston Crab. But, I mean, like, he just knows where to put it for that big tease each and every time where it just gets a huge pop, man. I love Jericho.
I haven't seen the match. I guess it was the last match. Was it with Naito? And he catches him, I guess he's on the second turnbuckle, and somehow he gets him in the walls. And that's all I saw, a highlight of the match. Did you see his recent match?
I didn't. The last one I watched was him and Kenny Omega, which was phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, dream match. Incredible. Kenny Omega, next level. Awesome.
I got a chance to talk to that guy in WrestleMania New Orleans this past year. And just 30 minutes, just casual conversation.
Yeah.
Good dude, kind of see where he's coming from.
Sure.
Student of the game, really takes, I don't know what the word or the way to describe his approach to matches. I guess very educated and well thought out.
Yeah.
And just with a lot of insight.
Sure.
The dude comes up with some great shit.
Absolutely.
Were you old enough to be a fan of the Dynamite Kid?
Dynamite was kind of gone when I was coming up, but obviously through watching tapes and everything, especially like getting a hold of like some old Stampede Wrestling DVDs and stuff, just really fell in love with his in-ring work. And I loved Chris Benoit, and Benoit was heavily inspired from Dynamite. So once I realized that Benoit got all his stuff from Dynamite, like, because when I first got into wrestling, it's ridiculous in retrospect, two of my favorites at that time were Benoit and Angle. So when I started training, I remember telling my trainer, I want to do a bunch of submissions and, like, you know, wrestling takedowns like Angle and Benoit. As I grew, I realized that just doesn't suit the type of performer I am because, yeah. You know, you could get into wrestling, you could want to be like a Kurt Angle or a Benoit or an Austin or a Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels, but like, I feel like you have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror. And if you want to be a wrestler, you have to realize, where do I fit in? You know, not everybody could be like an Angle or a Benoit, and that's definitely not who I was, but I love those guys.
You have a favorite tag team?
Depends on the era. I always love watching the Rock and Roll Express. I love the Brainbusters because of the way they, like their cutoffs, their double team stuff, especially as heels. My first favorite tag teams as a kid were probably the Rockers and the Legion of Doom. As I got older, Attitude Era, Edge and Christian, the Dudleys, which Zach and I got to work with a couple years ago, which was pretty phenomenal.
How was that and how were they?
Awesome. You know what?
Those are two big physical dudes.
Big guys.
And man, Jesus Christ, all the belts and championships they've held and the organizations they've been in.
Yeah, like just all the experience.
So how was their attitude?
Great. You know, I never met Bubba Ray until that day. And everyone always says like, oh, Devon's cool and Bubba is a dick. Bubba was awesome. So giving. And like the way he structures matches, I don't know. Like I feel like, we only had that one interaction, but I feel like he seems pretty underrated in my book after like dealing with him. Just like the way he looks at wrestling, he's got a great mind. And it was like an honor to work with those guys.
You know, what I enjoyed, well, first of all, I enjoyed all of their entirety of the work. I remember when he first kind of busted out in ECW with the glasses and the tape on the
yeah.
And he would do the stuttering thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I saw the guy doing it, I never knew what he'd turn it into.
Right.
But I just recognized talent, charisma, presence, and then, like you said, the body of work, the way they structured their matches. But I really enjoyed, and I was watching from afar and kind of sporadically, but as much as I could, his run. Was it TNA or is it Impact or is that the same? But anyway, his run as Bully Ray as a single.
Oh, yeah.
He's done his stuff with Brooke Hogan. He was leading, the Aces and Eights,
yep.
Whatever they're called. But man, that dude's a hell of a promo.
He reinvented himself.
He reinvented himself, but a hell of a mind for the business.
Yeah.
And he turned, you know, a tag team, his half of the tag team, into a tremendous, you know, solo personality.
Yeah, yeah. It was an incredible thing. So I love the Dudleys, Edge and Christian. Can't forget the Hardy Boys. Love the Hardy Boys, right? I mean, the stuff they did with tables, ladders, and chairs changed the business.
Dude, I remember watching, because I had to watch the pay-per-view back in WrestleMania 17,
yeah.
That match that they had. I mean, it was like totally off the charts. Of course, myself and The Rock were in the main event.
Yeah, you had to follow that.
Triple H and Undertaker wrestled.
Yeah.
But Triple H's entrance, one of the greatest entrances of all time with Motorhead singing there.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, we're Motorhead. We're here to kick your ass.
Yeah.
And he just lit into that song.
Yeah.
It was just an unbelievable moment.
I mean, can we talk about you and The Rock? And
yeah.
Like, that's one of my favorite matches. I mean, your whole series of matches, 15, 17, 19, I mean, it's a great trilogy, right? And what order do you feel, personally, like those matches rank? Because for me, I feel like 17 is like the best. And maybe it's like the whole atmosphere. The video package, like when you put all that together, like 17 is my favorite. And I love 19, and now I put 15 last. And I also put 15 last because you didn't have your vest for that show.
God dang, man.
Sorry to bring that up.
Sorry-ass divorce, and I was so scrambled.
Yeah.
I forgot my damn vest. Of course, you know, Rock's going to come out. Well, he had the belt at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rock comes out, looks like $1 million. He's a champ. And then I guess I came out first and I'm walking out there like a ragamuffin with this damn rattlesnake shirt. I was proud of the shirt.
Great shirt.
The shirt was my idea, but you don't want to walk to WrestleMania in a damn t-shirt.
No.
Even if you're trying to sell some merch.
Right.
That ain't what you want to do. You want to walk out there in your regular shit.
Right.
And my regular shit was my black vest with the silver letters on it and my black trunks and everything else.
Yeah.
So luckily I remembered everything else. Forgot the vest. And That's one of the worst feelings you can have is when you're at the big event, the big show of the year.
Yeah.
Now, this is before we started playing, you know, stadiums and arenas.
Sure.
This is in Philly.
Yep.
So it was about 19,000 people there. But
yeah.
All of a sudden, you're going through your bag. All the boys, you know, we're rolling Tumis because that's the brand of bag you roll when you finally get somewhere and you got a little bit of money.
Yeah.
So I opened my Tumi up and I'm like,
uh-huh.
And then you have you ever lost something and you search through the whole thing and then you start searching through it again?
Dude.
You do it 5 or 6 times because you think automatically, or you didn't see it the first time you pilfered through anything and it's going to automatically appear.
Yeah.
And you think because, you know, I was Stone Cold Steve Austin time and, you know, Stone Cold's got to have a, you know, like a backup wardrobe with the seamstresses, you know, about 5, 6, 7 vests deep.
Yeah.
No, that ain't the case. I ordered one at a time.
Yeah.
And I forgot that son of a bitch. And I was madder than a hornet walking out to the ring with Rock at 15. And me and Rock loved working with each other.
Yeah.
And after I won that match at the end, you see me and I get up on that damn turnbuckle. I clash two Coors Lights together. And I think I'm mouthing something like, "You fucking right," or something like that.
Yeah.
"You goddamn right." It was words to that effect because, yeah, I just got finished beating The Rock.
Yeah.
But what I was really celebrating, the fact that, you know, this divorce, which was, it'd been ongoing for a long time.
Yeah.
You got your, you know, you got your professional stuff. Then you head into your professional stuff with all your personal stuff on your mind, especially being a divorce.
Yep.
And that was a celebration of making it through the moment.
Yeah.
Now the weight was off our shoulders. We rocked it. And no pun intended. We had a damn good match, and we accomplished the task at hand. And then we got to Houston. I'll never forget. We went to Papa's Steakhouse.
Yep.
And it was me, Rock, Pat, Jim Ross, Kevin Sumlin, former coach for defense coordinator for Oklahoma, and former head coach of Texas A&M, came by the table to say hi. He was eating. And we were just kind of just tossing ideas around. You know, I ordered a big-ass steak, you know, drank a bottle of wine, and we just – and, you know, Pat, oh, yeah, you know, the way that I want him to try to imitate a French accent. So we're just kind of laying down the groundwork, right?
Yeah.
And then we get to Billing the next day, and we'd already done the package. And that clashing of the beer that you see in that video, that was done at Detroit, where there was Joe Louis or Kobo. And then at My Way song, and then you had Jim Ross and Ollie calling the match, and I remember, you know, I was a baby, and I'd started feeling a little bit flat, you know, and that build and the way Rock was coming up, just that build kind of reinvigorated me.
Sure.
And I was just like on fire. And that night, I go out first, and it's a hell of a response. Rock comes out second because he's got the belt.
Yeah.
And I think my pop was a little bit more than his. Had we been in Miami, it might have been reversed.
Sure.
But two tremendous, outstanding pops. And then we always, for some reason, me and Rock always like a jump start to our matches.
Yeah.
And we jumped that thing off. We had those people hook, line, and sinker. You know, Vince comes out. I do the heel turn at the end, which I would have never done in hindsight, being 2020. But the 17 match was... It was the main event of that show. I thought it was I think it was the best wrestling match on the show. Obviously, you could argue that spectacular match that the Hardys, Edge and Christian, and Dudleys were in was equally spectacular. But from a one-on-one standpoint, you always have to have that factor. So I thought we delivered, and it was an unbelievable match.
Yeah.
And when you go to 19, you know, I was with Kevin Nash the day before the event. We're at the gym, kind of pedaling on a recumbent bike, and my legs are kind of twitching a little bit. And that's when I went back to my hotel room, and I got out of the elevator on like the 28th floor of the Grand Hyatt there in Seattle. And boy, my heart just started beating out of my chest. It was going about 180 beats a minute.
Jeez.
And I was thinking to myself, I'm fixing to F and die.
Yeah.
I stepped off that damn elevator, and I didn't know where to shit or wind my watch. And a lady from my office, Liz DeFabio, was down the hall. And I got off that damn elevator, and I wasn't selling, but, man, I had this look in my eyes. Because you ever had your heart start beating about 180 beats a minute for no reason?
Yeah.
I look at it and said, "Liz, I need help."
Yeah.
Luckily, my room was right there. Unlocked the key, went in my room, dialed 911, a couple ambulances come. Dude, I'm in the main event tomorrow.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, two ambulance crews come over there, and they put a bunch of sheets up to kayfabe the fact they're taking Stone Cold to the damn hospital.
Yeah.
It turned out that I think it put four liters of fluid in me. I drank two pots of coffee that day, a couple of Rip Fuels and other bullshit like that.
Yeah.
Drank about three bottles of wine tonight. I was dehydrated.
Yeah.
They were talking pulmonary embolism, all these tests, bullshit.
Right.
And anyway, nothing was wrong with me. I just run myself dry and was dehydrated.
Yeah.
And my body said, hey, fuck you.
Crazy.
So anyway, checked out the next day, you know, kind of went to the, got all my shit up,
yeah.
Remembered my vest.
Go ahead.
And, went out there and we kind of had a basic match. I've never watched 19 back because I don't want to watch it back because that was my last ride. And that was, I was 38.
Yeah.
And shortly, after that, I retired.
Yeah.
I think it would bring me back in a GM capacity. But no one knew that was going to be my last match. And all of a sudden, you get to Seattle in that big ass stadium. And the guy, Jason, that always lights those buildings, had done a spectacular job. And it's one of those, you haven't got there yet, but you will sometime probably. You'll know that you're going out for your last match. Nobody else knew it. The crowd didn't know it.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty emotional day. But, now, I look back, but to go back to what you were saying, 15, 17, 19, go 17 first, 15 in second place, 19 in third place.
Okay.
That's how I put them.
When we're recording this right now, yesterday technically was the 20-year anniversary of Hell in a Cell with Foley and Undertaker. Do you realize that? That's crazy, right?
I can't believe it's been so long.
20 years. That's one of those matches where every time you watch that, it never gets old. It's crazy what Mick went through in that match and live to talk about it, you know?
I was just reading on my Google alerts either this morning. I haven't had a chance to read it, but I think it was like a headline of like Undertaker had thoughts of stopping that match.
Yeah.
In progress. I haven't read it yet, so I didn't, and I've never talked to him about it.
Sure.
But that one bump that he goes straight through and almost lands on his head, lands on his back, could have killed him, paralyzed, could have done a million things to him. And his tooth bounces out and hits him in the nose.
Yep.
And it's stuck there. I don't think that bump was supposed to happen.
No.
The one off the top through the table was supposed to happen, but then bringing the thumbtacks. Dude, that match was so unbelievable. That match was so off the charts. And I'm back here watching it. Me and Kane are in the main event.
First blood match.
Yep. Now, I just came out of the hospital, Herman Hospital in Houston, had a major staph infection in my right elbow, whatever was taped up during that match. And so I'm in the back. I've been in the hospital for 3.5 days. Flew right from Houston from the hospital to get ready to go into the ring. I'm working with Kane, who I love working with. Great big man, can go into the Hall of Fame one of these days whenever they put him in. And I'm watching this carnage that these guys are laying down. And it's kind of like in 13, me and Brett were the semi-main.
Yeah.
And Sid and Undertaker were the main. And they couldn't follow us.
No.
Then at this occasion, it was me and Kane in the main event. But there was no way. And our match was decent. I try to have a first blood match with a guy in a mask.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
And a guy who's, 6'9", 6'10",
sure.
330.
Yep.
So the odds were stacked against us. And
right.
The fact that they had so many tools that they had to use, the cage, all the stuff that they were going to incorporate, the story that they told, it was unbelievable. Going out there and try to work after that match was like, you ever had a match where you hear crickets?
Oh, yeah.
And that's with respect to Kane, and we went out there and gave it our best, but we couldn't follow that. And as you're talking about how tough Mick Foley was during that match, remember after that match, he had to come run out and seemingly interfere in my match, and I was going to hit him with a stunner.
Yeah.
So after being through everything that he'd been through, and I think he was concussed.
Yeah.
And totally just beat to shreds.
Oh, for sure.
I'll never forget seeing him run down that ramp kind of like sand crab mode.
Yep.
I'll never forget it. And I watch it back on a video. And that's like Mick Foley. If there's something to do and you're supposed to do it, no matter how effed up he is, he's going to be there and do his part.
Yeah.
So he could have easily just said, hey, man, guys, I can't make it. I just had the shit beat out of me. There he was on a receiving end. I think it was a chair shot or whatever, but nonetheless a stunner.
Yeah.
So dude's one of the toughest guys I've ever met in my life. And we used to travel together. Also one of the cheapest guys I've met in my life.
Yeah. It's not
Are
a bad
you frugal
thing.
On the road?
I try to be, man, because I, indie wrestling, the paydays vary, so you try to save as much money as you can. I think we talked about it last time. I eat a lot of tuna and chicken. You gotta stay cheap, man. Gotta stay cheap.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls. My conversation once again with Gregory Irons, and give big ups to True Car. If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? Yeah, the same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. Listen, all you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. You're also going to need car insurance for that new vehicle. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. All right, college football fanatics, listen up. You have to get on board with the Big 12 podcast. Join host Chuck Cooperstein each week as he covers all the happenings at Baylor, Iowa State, University of Kansas, Kansas State, University of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas, Texas Tech, and West Virginia. That, my friends, is the Big 12. Don't miss the Big 12 Podcast, brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Download and subscribe exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. And don't forget to rate and review. Hey, man, they say soccer is the football of the rest of the world. Only soccer's championship lasts an entire month. And there's no better place to spend that month than at Buffalo Wild Wings. Get into B-Dubs, where they got match day select domestic beer specials and a special sauce mashup to go along with their already loaded roster of 21 sauces and seasonings. That's enough combinations for a full month's worth of delicious cheering. Catch all the soccer action at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Offers vary by location.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Hey, you were talking last time we talked about how the indie scene is really thriving right now.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I feel like the internet has made the world a lot smaller. You know, like YouTube, just streaming services everywhere. I feel like everywhere you're connected now. And I feel like, you know, before if you wanted to watch wrestling from Japan, you had to do tape trading, you know, back in the day. Now, you just get the New Japan streaming service. You can watch all the New Japan you want. So I just feel like you don't have to just choose WWE. WWE's great, right? I love what NXT's doing. Like, Triple H is like, he's got something really special with NXT. Impact is great. But, like, I don't know, just internet has changed the game to where it's like, you don't just have a couple choices. Like, you can watch anything. I mean, there's this Powerbomb TV service now that just streams, like, 100 wrestling promotions or something like that, independent wrestling promotions. And like, so you can watch a promotion from Ohio, you can watch a promotion from Georgia, you can watch a promotion from Philly. I mean, it's like the game has changed. And I think that's what's made wrestling so popular. It's like, not limited to one thing.
Who's given you some of the best advice you've ever gotten in the business?
Last time we talked about Nate Mattson, a guy from Detroit. He's really pulled me aside and just helped me with psychology over the years. Johnny Gargano. The first time I wrestled Johnny, obviously we trained together, but I remember the first time we wrestled. It was the first time that I wrestled someone where not only did he tell me what we were doing, but he told me why we were doing it. And that stuck out to me because, I don't know, I feel like if you're told how to do a headlock, it's just a headlock, right? But if you're told why you do a headlock, then you could take a headlock and put it in different places and do different things with it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you could do a drop down, but if you know why you're doing a drop down, then you could change things up. So like that opened my brain up a little bit more. I was able to understand wrestling because when I started, you know, a lot of the younger guys like to memorize a lot of the stuff. And yeah, you still like listen to the crowd and call stuff on the fly, but like for the most part, a lot of it's choreographed, right? So the idea when I started of like memorizing like a 5-minute match, like remembering my parts and then like maybe remembering both parts just in case, crazy. But after I worked with Johnny for that first time, and by the way, the first time we wrestled was outside behind some bar in front of like 10 people and no one cared. But he wrestled me in this match because I wanted to send it to other places so I can get more bookings. That just changed it for me. And then, of course, like, you know, Matt Cross is one of my closest friends. Just the advice he's given me on the road and just like dealing with like promoters and stuff, like, good dude, similar interests. We're both, you know, we don't drink or smoke, so it's like we always have a party on the road. And they're some of my closest friends, and they've given me some of the best advice. So it's really cool.
So what is your tip with dealing with different promoters?
Be respectful. Also know your worth. Like when I first started, you know, the first time I ever got paid, I didn't get paid for the first 8 months I wrestled, okay? First time I got paid was in Pittsburgh, which is about a three-hour drive from Cleveland. And promoter shook my hand, gave me the brother handshake, and had, you know, palmed me with some money and opened my hand at $5. And I got to tell you, I was ecstatic. I've never been happier to get $5 in my life, right? But if a promoter gave me the brother handshake now and I opened my hand at $5, I'd say, all right, we have a problem. You know what I mean? But at the time, $5 was a big deal because I feel like I earned that. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah, I just try to be respectful, but, like, no, I'm worth it. And the thing that sucks about indie wrestling, too, is, like, guys running shows that know what they're doing. But, Steve, there's a lot of dudes that they should still be buying a ticket. And I feel like there's some younger guys who maybe get booked. We live in a GIF era where guys are getting booked not because of their psychology, but because of GIFs. And, like, I mean, I can't do the cool stuff these kids are doing. Like, that's great that you could do, like, a Canadian Destroyer off the top rope or whatever. Like, and if you can make it make sense, cool. I can't do that. But I feel like some of these kids get booked off of GIFs and then don't have psychology. And you can't go to a promoter and be like, hey, you know, maybe put him with someone that he can learn from, or maybe don't book this guy at all because he has that one spot he does that you saw in a GIF, because some of the promoters are fans that like GIFs. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like they're not actual promoters. But in general, you know, you try to be respectful and, like, navigate properly. And, like, you know, a guy like M-Dog, you know, he's helped me over the years with doing so.
I'll never forget, I wrestled my first match at the world-famous Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas, working against Frogman LeBlanc. I've told the story many times, won't tell it again. I'll just say that was a television match.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I don't remember if they paid me that day or it was a week later. I just remember getting the money, and the amount I got was $40.
Whoa.
And I've been working on a freight dock, driving a forklift, loading and unloading trucks. Just got finished playing football for North Texas State University. Long blonde hair, pretty good looking kid. A little jacked up.
Yeah.
North Texas had a good weight program. $40. Here was my thinking. I've been in the wrestling school 5 months, one day a week.
Yeah.
You're not going to learn a whole lot, just like you were 2 days a week.
Yep.
One day a week, and I'm splitting a ring, one ring with 25, 30 other cats. And I had that first match. I wasn't ready for it. And it was on television, no less. And Chris ain't even smarting us up.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're going over this match, and we're pretty much putting it together. It ain't going to be really called in the ring.
Sure.
We're putting it together backstage. Well, you never did that. So how's it going to go when they ring the bell?
Right.
Like shit. So anyway, my point is, they give me that $40. And I'm thinking, hey, man, I'm on TV. And world-class television back then, this is the back end, world-class had already kind of started devolving. It was past its peak years.
Yeah.
Jared had bought it. It was technically the USWA. But my point was, if I'm on TV and I'm a pro wrestler and this, you know, this is a televised match, I'm thinking, I don't know how much it's going to cost, but surely it's going to be, you know, a couple hundred, $300, $400, $500 because I'm on the big time now.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's like the first match on the show, but I like $40. Turns out when Jared sent me down to Tennessee a couple weeks later, I started working full time. I was making $15 and $20, you know, a night payoffs,
and this is
a 450-mile, you know, round trip.
Yeah.
So that's when I started starving my ass off to death. So yeah, my first payoff was $40. Come to find out shortly thereafter that $40 was a hell of a payoff.
Yeah.
Because $15 and $20 was the norm.
Oh my God, that's ridiculous.
But it, probably because you're so young and coming up on the scene, you probably didn't have all the grizzled veterans, because back in the day when you come into a territory like Bronco, Lubitsch, Skandar, Akbar, they'd pull you aside.
Yeah.
And they would say, save your money, kid.
Yeah.
Did anybody ever give you some of those tips?
See, you come across like guys that like really deserve respect. Like, did a lot of shows with Chris Hamrick when I started, who gave great advice. Tracy Smothers, like those Southern guys who, like, you know, they've been everywhere and did it all, right? But a lot of the times on indie shows, you get a lot of these quote-unquote veterans who they'll come at you like, brother, I've been working 15 years. What they don't mention is they've been working one show a month every few months for 15 years. And like, you know, like they don't exactly know what you're talking about. So depending on who it is, you know, you just, you kind of listen to them like, oh, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And sometimes you got to let that go in one ear and out the other. Cause you know, like this guy is really not, he's just kind of here. You know what I mean? Like, and those are also those same guys who, you know, when, you ask them, what would you like to do tonight? They go, brother, I'm easy. I'm easy, brother. And I'm thinking myself, like, well, what do you do? And they're like, I do like a body slam. And I'm like, oh, please give me something to work with here. Like, oh my God. And I'm thinking myself, and like, when, like, I know that you're working like six times a year. Let's take it easy. Like, when you say it to me, it's like, I mean, we don't want to get hurt, right? But like, dude, you're not wrestling that much. Like, can we try to make this good? People paid to watch us. Yeah, I don't know. It gets frustrating sometimes on the indies. As good as the good ones are, some of the bad ones are fairly bad.
I think you mentioned, did you mention in our first podcast that you don't really drop kick?
Oh,
Zach
no.
does, but you don't drop kick.
I cannot.
Does that do the right leg?
I think so, because like a lot of my hops that I do, like I could do like a springboard back elbow. I'm coming off my left. You know what I mean? And actually, when I first started training, I was afraid to come off the top rope because my balance is meh. But like over time, I've you know, it's about accentuating your positives, hiding your negatives, learning your strengths and weaknesses. And so like, you know, I got a mean crossbody that I can do off the top. Depending on who I'm working with, I could do like a little flipping powerbomb off the top, Shawn Michaels style elbow. So it's like, yeah, that's why I can't do a drop kick. It just doesn't work out.
I could do a drop kick. I'll never forget, and I told the story before, but I'll tell it to you because you're not drop kicking.
Yeah.
Me and Brian are working with a couple of guys that are there to get us over.
Yeah.
So we're going to pretty much be on offense. And we go in there, and me and Brian are doubling up on a guy. We're sending him into the rope. We both have an arm. We're sending him in for the ride. And I said, double drop kick. I called it right then and there. You know, it wasn't a double elbow, drop kick. Because I was a big fan of Jim the Anvil Neidhart and Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yeah.
And Jim was doing a drop kick, and so was Bret. So I said, you know, Jim, Jesus Christ, that dude's really, really powerful.
Yeah.
But he also had some springs on him. He could drop kick pretty decently.
Sure.
Man, Brian had those coils. He hit the guy like right there in the face, you know, where you're kind of aiming, or, you know, higher than chest level.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Or certainly not below the sternum. Dude.
Yeah.
I hit Brian hit him in the face. I hit him in like the mid thigh region.
Oh my God.
And I was like, you know, at the time I didn't really think anything about it. I just knew I didn't get very high.
Yeah.
And it was a televised match. And of course we go backstage. And as soon as we got backstage, the king of the monitor, because there was always a monitor back here in center stage, in different parts of the dressing rooms, maybe three. And
yeah.
There were the little bitty black and white ones, I think. They might have been color. But all the boys, when, you know, we were doing these TVs back in, because, man, this is the early 90s. It was a whole different scene.
Yeah.
And so Arn, if you were out there working, everybody was crowded around the monitor, and Arn was basically doing color commentating.
Yeah.
Ragging on everything that anybody did shitty, he was going to catch and just blister them.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine the calamity at the monitor while I was in ring. But as soon as I get back here, he always called me Hog.
Okay.
For some reason. And he goes, Hog. He goes, he started just blistering me about that dropkick over and over and over again. He goes,
yeah.
He goes, God damn. He goes, that's the worst dropkick I've ever seen in my life. And so from that moment on, I think I was in my late 20s.
Yeah.
So I was a pretty good athlete. I just didn't have no springs on me.
Sure.
That was the last dropkick in the history of my career right there, just because Arn blistered me. And Arn, see, the cool thing about it was he was ribbing, but he was shooting, but he was kind of ribbing on the square.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like a heads up, like, that is so effing shitty. Don't ever do it again.
Don't do it again.
And
yeah,
I never did it again.
Yeah. Yep. I was just thinking about it. I know one of your last podcasts was Vader tribute, right?
Yeah.
What is your favorite interaction or match with Vader? When I think of Vader, I think of the Final Four match you guys did at In Your House. You, Brett, Vader, and
Undertaker.
Yes. Great match.
I've been rolling into that match. I had the flu and I had a blown out knee. I don't know what I'd done to my knee, Because I remember doing the promo because I was sick as a dog.
Yeah.
Got a blowed out late knee. I cut that promo live on television to Vince McMahon. I was off location somewhere, but I could hear him through the headset. And I just remember I was sick, and I remember that I was starting to get hot. And I remember that being in the ring with The Undertaker and Bret the Hitman Hart and Vader was pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Now, because you're in the grind so much and it's such a competitive business, you know, I wasn't holding them in high regards. I just knew that I was, you know, three top ass guys.
Sure.
And it's time for me to, you know, do good. But like I said, I was beat up. We ended up doing the finish because I ended up winning that match, didn't I? No, Brett did. Brett did because
he got to wrestle Sid the next night. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that moved him on. But my best memories of Vader, because I remember I did what do they call those matches? I did one with Mick Foley as well. It was, I guess, like an anything goes match on Monday Night Raw. But my favorite memories aren't working with Vader. My favorite matches are watching him work with Sting and Flair and guys like that. But I loved when Leon would get a guy in the corner and he'd just start throwing these clubs, these left and right clubs.
Yeah.
Or that, or he'd send a guy in the ropes and do the Vader bomb. And just the physicality. Then when he'd get on the ropes and kick his legs out and do the squash on him or the moonsault.
Yep.
I loved how physical that guy was, and he was like a big teddy bear.
Yeah.
Super guy. And watching Leon work in Japan when they first put that gimmick on him, because that gimmick was first going to go to Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, okay.
That gimmick he's wearing. But watching that guy walk in the ring, it brought back, it was like memories of, do you remember the first time, and you're only 31 now, do you ever remember, or have you seen old footage back when the Road Warriors first busted out and they came with those spiked shoulder pads and the paint and the mohawk and the reverse mohawk or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
But Hawk had those traps that were this tall.
Oh, yeah.
And Animal was this wide.
Yeah.
And those fucking guys would go to the ring and just, they became the masters of the no sell.
Yeah.
Or they'd take them up and just get right back up.
Yep.
But stuff like that. So watching Vader's entrance really reminded me a lot of the Road Warriors and how dominant they were.
Yeah. Would you believe that I got to work with Vader?
Did you?
I did.
When?
About 3 years ago in Cleveland.
Okay. How was that?
Interesting.
I think he was in a different place when he worked with you.
Yeah. So I had a separate match. It was like a 8-man tag. I had this stable of guys protecting me called the Iron Curtain, right? So I talk all this trash to the crowd and, I challenge people to come in the ring, right? But I'm a bitch and I have these three guys protect me. So you have to go through, these guys. But you can't, if you get in the ring, I will fight you, but you won't because you got to get through the three big guys. So I'm in a separate match, 8-man tag, and, Vader got booked on the show. So I talked to him earlier in the day about like what we could do because he's going to beat me up. He's going to beat all of us up after the match. And we came up with whatever. He was just going to beat up all the guys, and then I was going to walk up to him, and he was just going to chokeslam me. So finished the 8-man tag, and the ring announcer, Pedro, leans over in my ear as I'm selling after we just won, and he goes, "Get out of the ring. Vader just changed the whole spot." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "I don't know. He just said, get out of the ring, and he's changing the spot." So I'm like, okay. And so we powdered out. And Vader gets in the ring, cuts a promo, super over, because he's Vader. And so in my head, as I'm on the floor, I'm thinking as he's talking, I'm like, what am I going to do now? So I'm like, and I'm thinking logically, I'm like, okay, I guess I just filter these guys in one by one, and I'll go in last. I'm not supposed to hit Vader, but I'm thinking to myself in my brain, I think I have to, like, try to attack him, because he's, you know, I think it makes sense, right? And then he could just kill me. So I'm watching him just murder my friends. Just this guy, Ben Boom, just murders him. This guy, Joey, murders him. Jerry murders him. And I'm the last one. So the way the setup was, there was a stage behind the ring. So that would be where Vader's back was. So I couldn't go all the way behind him, but I wanted to try to sneak up on him and then just maybe turn him around. But as I'm getting in the ring, Vader, he already sees me. He's turning because he thinks the spot is me just going to come up with him. But I just watched my friends get beat up. So I'm like, logically, I'm not just going to be like, hey. And then so someone had told me, I can't remember who, that Vader likes getting hit really hard because he'll respect you more. Maybe I was being ribbed. I don't know. But for some reason, I'm pretty good with seeing ribs. I thought to myself, you know, because I know all those stories from WCW and stuff. When like a jobber would see his name next to Vader, they would just be bye. They would just leave because he was so scary and powerful and rough in the ring. So I get in there and Vader already sees me. So I'm like, F it. And I just start forearming him as hard as I can. And he puts up his arms and he's blocking them. And he goes, what the F? What the F? Lighten up. And so when I hear that, I already had it in my brain. I always like to do as a bad guy, like big shots to a big guy. And then I see it's going bad and I start coming with like the comical, terrible shots. So I'm starting with the comical ones now. And then I back down and he just takes that big paw and just clubs me in the side of the head, right? And like, it looks like I die, but I didn't, thank God. And then he chokeslammed me, and that was the end of the segment. So afterwards, I go out, and he's sitting in a U-Haul. He's got the mask off, got his singlet top off. I walk up to him, and I go, Mr. Vader, was that okay? I hope you're all right with that. And he goes, brother, it's a work. And I, in my kid brain, I'm thinking about the stories about Vader, how he beat the crap out of guys. And so to have this moment where Vader looks at me, 5'4" Gregory Iron with cerebral palsy, and say, brother, it's a work, I thought it was hilarious. But he followed that with, but I loved every minute of it. Thank you so much. And I was like, thank God. Cause like, you know, I don't want to go out there and purposely stiff someone, but someone told me, and logically in my brain, I was like, I got to beat up Vader.
Yeah. But I'm not sure that I could hurt Leon, much less you hurt him. And the fact that he said, brother, it's a work.
Brother, it's a work.
Because I was there watching him maul all those people.
Yeah.
And I got mauled by him a couple of times, but watching him hit Sting, and Sting was on fire at the time, on fire.
Yeah.
And boy, just Leon would just be batting him around in those corners and send him in the corner. You'd always give him back. But I mean, holy smokes, other than Ric Flair making Sting's career, Vader made Sting's career.
Yeah.
For some reason, they just had this wicked chemistry. But I mean, he used to beat the flying shit out of people. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But and also, you know, like when you go back and you watch that footage of Stan Hansen when he gimmicks Leon's eye.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was just a big, tough dude. He was a teddy bear inside. But just the fact that he would say that because, I mean, yeah, he was an intimidating force.
Sure. Intimidating just talking to him before the show. I was like, oh God, like I don't want to get beat up by Vader.
I'll never forget. I mean, I'd heard a while back that he had said he had congestive heart failure. And I was thinking, man, not Leon. I mean,
right.
He's not going to be gone.
Yeah.
And then he passed away a couple weeks ago or months ago, whenever this podcast plays. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
I wish he would have went to the Hall of Fame before he passed away because he deserved to be in the Hall of Fame.
I agree. One of the biggest, the best big man of all time, for sure.
Do you watch all of WWE's program?
I do. Do every week.
Raw and SmackDown?
Yep.
What is it about SmackDown moving over to Fox?
I think that's a big move. I almost feel like, I could be wrong, but Fox is one of the major broadcast networks. So I feel like SmackDown's got to be like almost like the A show that is Raw, you know what I mean? Because I feel you're reaching that larger fan base. It's kind of like when SmackDown was on like UPN back in the day, but UPN was nowhere near what Fox is. I don't know. What are your thoughts on it?
No, it's interesting. I think it'll be refreshing just because USA Network is, to me, that's where WWE belongs.
Sure.
You know, or Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
And I was there for so long. And so now, I mean, the focus of Raw, well, now, you know, they're still running two nights live TV.
Yeah.
But I just think, for some reason, I think there'll be a concerted focus. And they're probably trying to focus on the fact that they're separate entities as well anyway.
Yeah.
I just think it'll be kind of reinvigorated.
Sure.
And SmackDown's a great show. But I just think now there's a singular focus on that,
you know,
as the centerpiece of Fox and Raw's for USA Network. I don't know if that even makes sense, but that's the only way I can make heads or tails of it. I think it's good for the guys. When you hear, I was doing Lillian Garcia's podcast the other day, and just listening to her talk about the numbers that were involved in the business transaction, you know, because they don't have pay-per-views anymore. I mean, I know they have the WWE Network.
Sure.
But now you just wonder, okay, well, how are you paying the boys? It's not like the houses are super strong across the house show schedule. The television tapers are doing pretty good. But now it's like, okay, well, you got some money to pay all the boys.
Oh, yeah.
And when I say boys, I mean the women as well.
Sure, so absolutely.
I don't know how it's going to shake down, but I think it's cool.
Yeah. Who are your favorites right now?
AJ Styles. I'm glad Shinsuke turned heel.
I love that.
Of course, I always want to see what Brock's going to do. I always want to see what the people are going to do with Roman. I love the fact that Bayley showed, oh, she turned heel, but this attitude she showed against Sasha.
Yeah, it's great.
Because I'm a huge Sasha fan as a heel. I love Bayley. She needed that edge, so I'm a big fan of hers as well.
Sure.
I love Charlotte, but I like Charlotte as a heel. I like Bayley as a baby, but I'm interested to see what she'll do with this new attitude. I love Sasha as a heel. As a baby, she's good, but she's a better heel.
Sure.
So those are the women in the forefront. It was interesting to see, does Carmella still have the women's belt?
Yes.
Yeah, so I've enjoyed seeing her character stuff.
Yeah.
Come along with her work. She shows an aggressive nature, attitude that I like.
Yeah.
So I got all kinds of good things going on. I love what they're doing with Braun. I like Elias. I wonder what they're going to do with him.
He's great.
Those are people off the top of my mind.
Yeah.
And like I said, I DVR'd, but we went to Nevada, and for some reason my system stopped recording, so I'm a little bit behind.
Mm.
Who jumps out to you?
I love Seth Rollins.
I really like Seth Rollins a lot as well. And I think his characters come around, which makes him stronger. And the Miz is always highly entertaining to me.
Miz has come a long way, right? Like, especially the last couple of years, like just promos, like in-ring work, like he's tremendous. And, you know, he's a Cleveland boy, so I got to show him some respect. I love AJ. You know, Shinsuke is a heel. Totally agree. He acting like he can't speak English every week is just hilarious. I love it. I'm glad Brian's back. Always loved Brian.
Yep.
He's the ultimate underdog babyface. He's doing the thing with Kane again, so that's going to be good for Kane because Team Hell No was awesome. As far as girls, I love Sasha. I love Bayley. I'm a little biased. I like Ruby Riott a lot. I used to travel with her a lot. I wrestled her a bunch of times. Ember Moon's great. Just a lot of those girls, man, like over the past few years with this Divas Revolution or this Divas Evolution, just, it's crazy how far women's wrestling has come, right? Tremendous.
It is. Well, yeah, especially within the last couple of years. And I like the Riot Squad. I'm glad you brought them up. So how long has Ruby been working?
I want to say she started in about 2010, 2011.
Yeah. She's coming along.
Yeah. She's really good. For years, I feel like she was a very underrated girl, and sometimes she doesn't have like the confidence in herself that she should, but like she's really good. And like I always tell her, like, I wouldn't just say you're really good, you know what I mean? Like she's there and she belongs there now in WWE. You know, she's awesome.
Is she from England?
She is from Indiana.
Why did I think she's from England?
I don't know.
You'd be right. I'm a damn. She's getting good.
She's great. Yeah. She had a really good match with Charlotte a couple months back too. That was really good on pay-per-view.
You like Charlotte as a heel or baby?
I like her better as a heel.
Why?
Just because Ric Flair is a heel, and I don't know.
First of all, Charlotte's standing on her own.
Yeah.
She happens to be a Flair.
Great.
She's lights out. But
for sure.
I love Ric Flair. He's my favorite of all time, but I love him as a heel 10 times more than a baby.
Yep.
And the same thing with Charlotte.
Yep.
She's phenomenal in her own right, under her own powers.
Yep.
But I love her as a heel.
Yep.
Because she has that swagger, that confidence.
Yep.
And when she's got to kind of, you know, because you've been a heel and a baby, and you thrive on being a heel.
I do.
With that creative freedom or just more room to expand or to not have any boundaries, really.
Yeah.
I like her in that role.
Yeah. And you know what? Like going into WrestleMania this year, I thought it was weird, like, to have her as a babyface against Asuka. But, man, they told a great story. Arguably the best story on the whole pay-per-view, man. Like, it was crazy.
From a singles match, that was the best match on the card, and I absolutely loved it. And I was wondering, because she had had a couple matches leading up to that, and they were okay.
Yeah.
But, man, here's the thing that made that match. It wasn't the fact that either one of them was a heel or a baby. It was the intensity of that match, and the belt was on the line, right?
Yep.
But it was the intensity of that match. I mean, all of a sudden, they started doing business, and I was like, holy shit.
Yep.
this is so aggressive, you can't help but like it.
And even the little things, like the finish, like her arm was messed up, yep. So she had to bridge up with the figure eight, but she only could use one arm, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it was...
I love Asuka. I mean, when you said, I didn't throw that name out there a while ago, but man, that chick is bad.
She's great.
I mean, she is just super good, super tough. And I thought, just, I didn't know how their chemistry would be, just because I didn't know.
Sure.
And it was just lights out. But I love the main event with Ronda, Kurt, Triple H, Steph, that whole storyline, because I thought Ronda really got off. Everybody got their shit in. It was a tremendous story. There were so many good things because Triple H, you know, and Steph are just so good on as far as being heels.
Sure.
There were parts in that match where I was standing up laughing because I knew what was coming next. Or then they got to a point in the match where the finishes kept going on.
Yeah.
Or the false finishes. I didn't know what was going to happen. So they were fooling me.
Yeah.
Because I'm always, you know, because I'm the grizzled veteran, I'm like, okay, they're doing this.
Yep.
And right when they're heading into that, they're doing another step.
Yeah.
So they kind of blew my mind from a single standpoint, Asuka Charlotte, but from a total showbiz main event Mania match.
Yep.
I thought that was the one.
It was great, man. It was great. What about Ronda? Like, I feel like I knew she was going to be something special, but I feel just the last two matches she's had exceeded expectations.
Yeah, and the match with Nia Jax was that match.
Yeah.
It was a match. I thought Ronda should have took more of it. But it was the Monday Night Raw after that.
Yeah.
That, you know, all the shenanigans and you know, her getting, you know, doing the physicality with Alexa Bliss, who I didn't throw that name out there as well.
Yeah.
Who
she's
is
great.
Really, really getting awesome. Even better and better. She's great on the stick. She's good in the ring. She's
awesome
going to get
promos.
Better at both.
Yep.
So she's already, for a person who hasn't been in the business real long, she's operating at a high level, but she's still going to improve. But yeah, man, Ronda. And it goes back, like I was telling Lillian the other day, the things that I always harp upon or tell people is not so much all of the moves that you do, but it's intensity.
Yep.
And if you're a heel, it's a mean streak. And if you're a baby, it's fire.
Yep.
And she has all three of those in spades.
Mm-hmm.
And she got a chance to put them on display. It's not about all the moves. It's about when, you know, it's like her, you know, her first eight whatever matches in MMA and UFC. I mean, it's like, oh, Jesus Christ. I mean,
yeah.
armbar. I mean, this chick is bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, now, but it's all about that aggression. And I just think she's a superstar. She's coming into this world. And Kurt Angle was the person that Triple H says this. I says, anybody that knows anything, to come out of the amateur wrestling ranks to get into the pro business and pick it up like he did is phenomenal. So for Ronda to come out of, you know, all of her judo background and success there, and her mom was highly successful in judo, and then to go through the MMA, which is a shoot, and come into, you know, a work environment and not let her, you know, ego, you know, get in the way of, you know.
Yeah.
And I think she knows those holy shit moments.
Sure.
That are part of sports entertainment or pro wrestling, because she's lived those moments in her matches. She's had those matches, and most of the times it was her doing things to other people, but
absolutely.
It's like when that crowd comes off her feet, I think that transfers. I mean, it's like all of Kurt Angle's amateur skills come into play.
Yeah.
Just because any kind of background that you have that adds more depth to who and what you are and your knowledge of the game, it all transfers. So the fact that Ronda's been in so many big moments in her judo and MMA career, I think she gets the entertainment aspect of those holy shit moments.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's a effing work and she's had to put on a show.
Yeah.
But you got to bring who and what you are, and she's a badass.
Absolutely. Now, like, just off the top of my head, I'm thinking about it, you worked a lot with Ken Shamrock back in the day. Mm-hmm. Do you think, like, because I used to love Ken Shamrock, and I almost feel like he was just a couple years ahead of his time. You know what I mean? I feel like if he would have debuted later, he might have, like, been, like, bigger. You know
I agree
what I mean?
100%. You had a stacked locker room.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, that whole damn dressing room is going to be in the Hall of Fame.
For sure.
And he came in there, and I got to give Ken Shamrock a lot of props coming the way he did, because he started out training to be a pro wrestler, ended up getting into MMA.
Yep.
Then got back into pro wrestling, because he never really kind of officially got cranked up.
Yeah.
And so when he came in there, he was legitimately the baddest guy in the world.
Oh, yeah. You
know, he was considered the toughest man in the world. Submissions, tough guy, striking. I mean, he was just a badass.
Yep.
And so he came in there, and man, I remember working with him, and that dude would do anything. He would take anything. You know, he would put guys over. Sure, he had his moments when he shined. He had his moments when he got his wins. But that was a guy. He and Ken has said this, like when he refereed our match at WrestleMania 13, you know, he was a little bit leery because he didn't want to be part of something that looked like shit or was fake or wasn't tough enough, or his brand was toughness.
Yep.
And so obviously he was happy to be a part of it. He brought a lot of star power to that match. He did a great job. But man, there's a guy who came into business with like really no ego. And he could have probably beat well, I'll take Ron Simmons out of the question, but he for sure could have went through the whole locker room.
Yeah.
But didn't have that ego and was a business guy. But I agree with you. Had he come a few years later, I think it'd have been a bigger star than he was, and I consider him a star.
Yeah. He was awesome.
Well, let's wrap this thing up. Where can people find you? Social media, Facebook, website, all that bullshit.
I got a website, www.gregory-iron.com. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/thehandicappedhero, at Gregory Iron on Twitter, at Gregory _ on Instagram. I'm sorry, at Gregory _Iron on Instagram. I botched that spot. And I am, as an individual and together, I am doing motivational speaking on top of wrestling with Zach Gowan. And we're looking to get out there for the 2018-2019 school year, you know, motivate some kids, inspire some people.
Awesome. Hey, man, thanks for sticking around and talking with me another hour.
Thanks for having me.
Move over, YouTube. The Collider Network is now on Podcast One. Get your fix for any of your pop culture needs with shows like Collider Factory and Movie Trivia Schmodown. Download and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One today. And remember to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up his podcast right off into the sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank Gregory Iron once again for coming by the house, 317 Gimmick Street and 316. Hell, we was in both cribs. And shooting a breeze with me about pro wrestling. I was going to hang on this podcast for a little bit, but I'm over here in Nevada. I'm coming home to Los Angeles. We're going to open up some more cans of Audio Whoop Ass as soon as I return. And due to popular demand, I figured we might as well bring back Gregory Iron while the iron is hot. Thank you, Gregory. Class act. Hey, man, ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has all my Broken Skull Ranch shirts, and you can find them by going to ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin. The best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company. You can find Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in Southern California. If you don't live in Cali, check out buyingandwine.com and see if they ship to your state. And man, when I'm out here in Nevada, I use my pocket knives a whole lot just because it's the outdoor lifestyle and I'm always using a blade. Two of the best blades available to all humans around the world is the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife and the Cold Steel Working Man's Knife. And you can get them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin or go to Cold Steel Knives website and look at all the badass knives that they carry. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially TheraWorks, WWE Network, TrueCar, Geico, and Buffalo Wild Wings. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. You can find all my sponsors at podcastone.com under the Killer Deals button at the top of the page. Folks, I am on social media. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Steve Austin BSR. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.